Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. This is Jonathan Hernandez, your host. Tommy Alexander is here with me. Tommy, what's up?
Not much, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks to everybody who has been recently rating and reviewing our podcast. We somehow got to the new and noteworthy front page on iTunes.
Nice.
And that's the same front page that Bill Simmons is on, which is pretty amazing. So, you know, thanks to the people who have been listening to our podcast, subscribing, downloading, rating and reviewing. We're not really sure why you guys are doing all that, but, you know, we'll take it. So to kind of ease us into this and not talk straight about basketball and have a little icebreaker, Tommy, have you been watching any new shows this season?
I guess the only show I've been watching is that Aziz show on Netflix, Masters of None.
Oh, right. How's that? I watched like one episode, but I haven't watched like the full thing yet.
Okay, so I love Aziz. Like, I think his stand-up is hilarious, but I was like a decently big Parks and Rec fan, and I thought he was he was good in Parks and Rec. But this show, I just think the show is like okay. You know,
it's like, kind of slow, right?
It's very
slow. It feels
slow. Yeah, and
it's like a super slow burn.
It's super slow burn, and it's like very low budget. So like his parents were in the second episode that I watched, which is kind of cool, but like also they're not actors, so it's, you know, it kind of doesn't ruin it, but it just makes it, the quality doesn't feel as refined. Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I'm willing to give it like more of a chance because so many people have been talking about it, I feel like. So I'm gonna go through there. It's like 10 episodes or something. So
right. I mean, it seems like a really smart show because that's who Aziz is. But it's not the kind of show that I'd want to watch first off the bat, you know, to make me feel good or like laugh and stuff like that.
Right.
Shows like that, I'd go to like a show like The League. Do you watch The League?
I have.
Oh, you gotta watch The League.
I've watched like the first. I always hesitate when people ask because I watched the first season.
You gotta keep watching. It's so good. It's like the funniest show on television. It's pretty crude, but it's pretty funny because Parks is done, because The Office is done. It's probably like my go-to like sitcom right now on TV. So definitely watch The League. In terms of new shows, if you haven't checked out The Grindr, I think you should check out The Grindr because you're in law too with Rob Lowe. It's actually pretty smart and pretty funny. So check out The Grindr. And did you ever watch Heroes when Heroes was a hit?
I never watched it. No.
Oh, okay. That's good then, because for some reason I decided to try and give Heroes Reborn a chance, and it's a hot mess. Speaking of hot messes,
the Lakers.
Oh, here we go, the Lakers. Yeah, but before the Lakers, speaking of hot messes, let's go around the NBA a little bit and talk about another hot mess. Probably the only team that's in more of a hot mess than the Lakers, the Sacramento Kings. What do you think about what's going on right now with DeMarcus Cousins and George Karl? And do you think they're going to axe George Karl, or is it going to be a trade for Cousins? What's going on?
So I think everybody's natural inclination is to say, oh, they're definitely going to axe the coach before they get rid of the player. That being said, this is a unique situation because this is not just George Karl. DeMarcus Cousins has had problems with so many coaches over the years. Pretty sure he even had problems with Calipari at times in Kentucky, which, like, who the hell has problems with, you know, Calipari? So
might have to hit a hard reboot here.
It's tricky for me. And like, they have some decent, like, young players, like McLemore might develop into a nice role player, especially with George Karl coaching him. I mean, to be honest, I have no idea what his stats are this year, but
he's not playing.
Oh, is he not? Okay.
No.
So I don't know. I feel like they traded Sauce Castillo. Who else did they have? Who were their young guys? They've been in the lottery for so many years. You expect them to have like a ton of guys.
They've done a terrible job picking, so.
So yeah, you're right, dude. I mean, it's okay. It's like Willy Cauley Stein. I think that's a good start in like the right direction.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their roster. They really just need to dump Rudy Gay, dump DeMarcus. I mean, they might not even have to go that hard of a reboot, but they for sure need to get rid of DeMarcus, I think, because this guy, he's now 25. I mean, he's still young, but yeah, he scores and he gets his numbers, but he's shooting 40% from the field. It's amazing that he's shooting 42% from three, which, you know, that's a huge a huge improvement, but to be a center, or I mean, I guess he's kind of playing power forward this year a lot, but regardless, to be a big, like basically 7-footer and as strong and as talented as he is and shoot 40% over like, you know, a pretty decent stretch of games and be a career 46% shooter. It worries me a little bit. Like they played the Spurs a couple of games ago and he shot 5 for 20, right, which you just like, is that going to happen? Okay. Yeah. If you're James Harden, that might happen once in a while. If you're Kobe Bryant, that might happen. If you're DeMarcus Cousins, that probably shouldn't happen. And I feel like with him, it happens a little bit too often for my taste.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the best solution for them would be to blow everything up. And I think they should blow up there. I mean, not blow up. Okay, wrong term. I think they should get rid of their owner as well, because it doesn't seem like he has any clue what he's doing. So maybe just a whole hard reset for the entire franchise. We'll see where that goes. Some other quick hitters around the NBA that I thought were interesting. Did you happen to see the Curry game today against Minnesota, or did you see the stats?
I saw his stats, and that guy, I can't believe him. Oh, my God. I can't believe him, dude. He's so exciting. I love watching him play. I love watching his highlights. He's amazing.
It's ridiculous. I was saying earlier that, like, 2K16 doesn't even do him justice because I can't do the stuff he's doing in 2K16 that he's doing in real life. It's like 46 points, 8 for 13 from 3, 15 for 25 from the field. It's just ridiculous. On the season, I think he's averaging like 33 points and then like 5+ threes per game, which I don't think anybody has ever done in the league.
Absolutely insane. Team, they just play the right way, man. And I'll give one guy I'm going to give like major props to this season is Klay Thompson, because Steph Curry is just like on a historic tear. Harrison Barnes is having a career year, which I mean, we kind of called this right in that one episode, but he's in a contract season. This is a huge year for him.
Yeah.
And he's having a career year. And Klay Thompson is just, you know, casually sitting here. He's shooting a good percentage, getting 15 points a game, which is much lower than he got, you know, I think the last couple of years. So
yeah,
props to him for like understanding the team concept and being like, look, Steph's going off right now. Eventually I'll have my time to do it. And
right,
I got my contract. I don't need, who cares about the stats? We're 10-0 and we had like a ridiculously hard schedule to start. So
yeah, that team is thing to see.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's pushing the issue or anything. It's a great like mindset to have. And for, especially for a young team like them, you know, to already have that like team mentality mindset. It's great.
Yeah.
Going to their opponent tonight, the Timberwolves. So I watched the game and the Timberwolves were actually in it in the fourth.
Yep.
And I'm just looking at the Timberwolves team and then I compare it to the Lakers and I'm just like shaking my head, dude. Like, why can't we be like this team? It's like their coach is not even, it's crazy. And then I look at Kevin Garnett, who only plays 11 minutes and takes zero shots, dude, zero shots. The entire time he was just conceding, passing to Wiggins, passing to Towns. And I'm just like, oh man, their development plan is going way ahead of what we're doing right now. And the way that Garnett is mentoring Karl Towns is totally different than what's going on with Kobe and D'Angelo and Byron Scott. It's just so sad to see like the stark contrast between the two teams, because I mean, this is what should be happening right here. The development of these young kids with the mentors there to sit back and just mentor and not care about their stats, essentially.
Yep.
It's crazy. And this Bielitsa guy, he looks like Nikola Mirotic, man. This guy's pretty good. I don't know where these guys are coming from, but I wish that we would get our own like Euro big. Instead, we have like the Huertas, the gnome, this small small dude.
So okay, look,
yeah,
my take on this situation is, I love the way the Timberwolves are playing, and it's pretty much the way that we wanted the Lakers to play, right? They're playing their young guys, like you said. They're running. They're playing free-flowing. They have Tayshaun and Kevin Garnett there. Those guys are averaging like 12 minutes a game each. Yep. And they're just mostly there for guidance, for support. And they're doing, like you said multiple times, a very damn good job of this, you know? And Bielitsa, I don't know how you say his name. I think that was right, though. That was pretty
good.
That was my first try.
Good job.
He's averaging like 8-8. Or actually, I'm looking it up. 9-7, which is amazing for a bench power forward. And, you know, he's pretty, I don't know if he's young, but he hasn't been around that long in the league.
He's a rookie, yeah.
Yeah, he's a rookie. So do we have someone exactly like him? No. We have a guy named Larry Nance who is an energy player who gets us a good amount of rebounds, who can get some points, showed some three-point range. This guy came in with, like, the biggest knock on him was he'll never be able to shoot. His shot is weird, but once the ball is in the air, it looks pretty every time, in my opinion. It's not like Randall who fires, like, a knuckleball up there, you know?
Right.
So we have a guy who we could develop into that type of player.
For sure.
Is he going to get there? I don't know, because our team, as we'll get into and we've discussed a lot, lacks creativity in lineups. And, you know, if Brandon Bass is 6'8 and you're going to play him center, why not, with next to Randall, mind you, at times, why not give Larry Nance a little bit of a run at center? I'm not saying Larry Nance is a center. Hopefully this never gets taken out of context. But, like, if you're going to experiment, why not experiment in those ways? If your argument is now's not the time to do that, well, then why didn't you do it in the preseason? Oh, I was going to say, one of the biggest knocks that I think both of us had with Byron in the preseason, among the many, so it was probably lost in the sea of bashing that we did, but one of the many critiques we had was that he did not do a good job of taking guys like Larry Nance and being like, okay, we have Larry Nance. We know for sure this guy can play power forward in the NBA. He's got the size, he's athletic, he's strong. He played power forward in college, basically. What can he play the three? I don't know. Let's see. This fool is so quick laterally. Maybe he can play the three against some threes. You know, experiment. Can he play the center? He's only 6'8", but he's so athletic and he's got such good hands. He was defensive player of the year in this conference. Maybe throw him out there against a small ball lineup and see how he works. If you're going to try it with Brandon Bass, why not try it with Larry Nance? You know, so that was the time that this kind of stuff should have been happening and it didn't. And now it's like, oh, Larry Nance came out of nowhere. That's how everybody's acting. And I'm like, okay, dude, but this was like a first round pick in the NBA. Like, he has some talent, and that's why Mitch and company picked him.
And I think that's the difference between both of these teams, right? Minnesota had a set game plan from the start that they followed, and it was the young guys are going to play, and the old guys are going to be there for 12 minutes max. And they're just going to be there to mentor and, like, pretty much babysit them. Outside of that, they'll come in when they're absolutely struggling, but outside of that, they're just there to help them, you know, pretty much. But the Lakers, they're all over the place, and we'll get into this later, obviously. They're just all over the place in terms of direction, what they want to do, what the coach is saying, what he's doing, and all this stuff. Hopefully once we get a new coach and once the organization kind of gets itself back together, we'll have something looking more like what the Timberwolves have, where you actually get to see some promise out of their young guys and see some chemistry and cohesiveness. So we'll see. Some last points here. I thought did you see the Porzingis shot in Charlotte?
I did. Oh, I saw the shot, the one that they had to take back.
Yeah, it was pretty funny, but that guy's a beast, dude. I feel like this draft class, the top three bigs are like absolutely beasting it.
Dude, this draft class is just like ended up. This draft class is way better than last year's draft class.
Way better.
Everybody was talking about 2014. So, I mean, we're fortunate we got a high pick, D'Angelo. Look, dude, right. D'Angelo, I know he doesn't look it right now to a lot of Laker fans out there. When you see the flashes, you see why this guy is going to be so dangerous in a few years. I mean, we're sitting here talking about, I don't want to throw, I'm not going to say what I was about to say, but this guy, he shows signs, and I think he's going to be really, really nice in a couple years for us.
For sure, and I just want to reiterate to people that it's okay to celebrate guys like Karl Towns and Jahlil Okafor and Kristaps Porzingis while also not calling D'Angelo a bust in comparison.
Right.
Because let's be frank, these guys are operating under entirely different circumstances.
Oh,
where
completely.
They are. Exactly. They're getting the minutes. They're getting the confidence from the
coaches. They all have
the green
light.
Backing. Exactly. And so, yeah, just keep that in mind when you think about all these guys and don't immediately say, yeah, we should have picked one of those three instead of D'Angelo. So,
and,
keep that contest.
Yeah, and also that's not even adding the fact that D'Angelo has played over 30 minutes in that one game this entire season.
Exactly.
Those guys are all averaging 30 minutes at least. So.
Exactly. That's pretty much our NBA wrap-up. We're going to get into now the Florida two-step that the Lakers just went on, where I like to call it a tale of two losses, but both losses to different teams kind of gave us different glimpses of what we'd like to see and what we wouldn't like to see from the Lakers moving forward in this season. Because let's face it, we're going to get losses, not wins. So we got to pick which kind of loss we want. So with that said, let's get into the recap.
And there is no limit to how good you can be.
Man, I really appreciate that. Those are strong words that I'm definitely going to take into consideration.
All right, so we are back and we're here to recap the Miami and Orlando games that the Lakers just played back to back on Tuesday and Wednesday, which were both surprisingly losses.
No way.
So let's start with the Miami game. I guess this could be quick because it was just a trash fest like it's been all season. They lost 101-88. So what are your thoughts on this game? The only things that happened here were pretty much Meta World Peace, like looking less washed up than Kobe, getting 14 points, 4-for-4 from three, and Nick Young getting hot from beyond the arc. Outside of that, it was just utter crap, essentially.
Okay, so this is my positive that I take away from this game, and it really sort of applies to both, but we'll start with Miami. This is our first game of the season without Kobe Bryant. And we shot 44% from the field against the team that I don't know if they still are because things are changing so fast this early in the season. But at that moment, that was the number one opposing field goal defense in the NBA. Oh. 44%, I'm pretty sure, was our season high up to that point. I'm not even kidding. So
that's sad.
So and I don't know. Is that due to the fact that we didn't have Kobe Bryant and they're shooting 6-for-19 every game? It could be, so, and then look, I know we're not talking about Orlando yet, but next game, Orlando, 49% as a team. Amazing.
Right.
So
I don't know.
I'll take that. The field goal percentage increase is a slight boost. The main negatives in both games, we played okay defense, I think, for like at least in the Miami game, we played good defense for a half, maybe. The second half, we played like complete garbage. I mean, there's clips all over the internet of like guys like Luol Deng, that one play where he takes the ball and it's not even like a pass break. And like everyone is just standing and no one goes to defend him. And he just waltzes to the rim and lays it up with nobody there. And it's like a joke.
That's us.
15 offensive rebounds we gave them is just so sad. Hassan Whiteside, I know he's a great offensive rebounder, but you can't give a team 15 offensive rebounds. And we only got 5 ourselves. So, and among all of our starters, we had one offensive rebound, which is Jordan Clarkson got one.
You forgot to mention the GIF-worthy, Vine-worthy clip of Marcelo Huerta's trying to beat the shot clock and doing that little circus, Cirque du Soleil circus, like, mime show. I don't know what the hell he was doing, but it was so embarrassing.
So embarrassing. Look, Marcelo Huerta, this gets back to what I was talking about before, about how you have 13 guys. Okay, maybe you don't play 13, but play 10, play 12. You don't have to play 10. Marcelo Huerta is solid. Does he need to be your primary backup point guard? Play him for some spot minutes here and there to give your main guys a quick rest. Why do you have to play him 15 minutes? And next game he played 10, which is slightly better. But it's just like, I don't know, dude. Byron, this game was Byron being Byron again. D'Angelo got benched. Clarkson looked okay. I mean, it's just like we played okay in one half, and I'm sort of how much of that was due to just like the red hot 3-point shooting, like you mentioned. But yeah,
that's essentially all it was. If we didn't have Meta hitting the threes or Swaggy hitting the threes, we would have it would have been a blowout the entire game. And, it's sad because I was expecting a lot more from Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson this game. But I think, like you said, Miami's a pretty good defensive team, so maybe not much can be taken away from that. But let's focus on D'Angelo here. Like, I think he'll be the focal point of both these games, essentially. So the reason why this was a terrible loss, besides just the fact that we lost clearly, was that this no development of this guy, no confidence given
zero,
to this guy.
Zero.
He essentially took 3 steps back from whatever was happening in the Knicks and Brooklyn game, essentially. D'Angelo Russell, I don't know if you saw the clips of him guarding Goran Dragic. And granted, Goran Dragic is doing terribly this season, but the dude was staying in front of him and cutting off every drive he was taking. And, he's been criticized so much for his defense, and this entire team is so bad on defense. that for him to not play the fourth quarter again in this game is just ludicrous to me. The fact that he actually was trying, he's like, all the criticisms that are being thrown at him, you can tell that he's made a definitive effort to fix those in the games coming out. You know, defense, that's what he did to start Miami. You know, he showed that he played well defensively. And then, you know, Byron's reasoning for not putting him in the fourth this time instead of it being a close game was, it's a blowout. I didn't want to put him in because they were up by too much, you know? So this is Byron talking out of two sides of his butt, pretty much, you know? It's just crazy what's going on. And this is why this was a terrible game loss for me, just because what you really can't take anything away from this, because not only did we lose, but we continue to peg down D'Angelo's confidence. And I'm sure you saw the post-game interview when reporters are pretty much asking D'Angelo, like, hey, did coach tell you what you need to do to improve, or, you know, what to do to play the fourth quarter again? And he just looked so dejected, and he just shook his head and was like, nah, he didn't, which is amazing development on Byron Scott's part, don't you think?
Right. My God, it's just every time I think about this, it's so frustrating. So, like, I'll never be the one to directly compare D'Angelo to, like, the other rookies in his class. Like you mentioned, just because we're talking good about the other rookies doesn't mean we think D'Angelo sucks or whatever. But
yeah,
since we mentioned Porzingis earlier, and this applies to a lot of – besides Okafor, who's just, like, everybody knew was just going to be a complete monster. He was super NBA ready. Most of the other rookie – and I guess Towns too. Most of the other rookies are, like – what you want to see from a rookie, showing signs, putting up some decent, like, contributions, but not, like, when you really dig deep into it, they're still a rookie. But, like, okay, we mentioned Porzingis. He's averaging 11-9 this year, and a block, and a steal, which superficially looks amazing. He's also shooting 39% from the field, 20% from three, taking nearly three attempts per game, and turning it over two times a game for a guy who's, like, barely handling the ball other than to shoot. So the point is not that Porzingis sucks. The point is that he is getting put in a position to make those mistakes and learn and show the signs. Everyone's like, oh, the other guys have shown signs. D'Angelo hasn't shown signs. D'Angelo does not put in a position to show signs.
Right.
Okay. You can't show signs from the bench. In this game, he played 21 minutes. He somehow got four rebounds in that 21 minutes, which was more than Clarkson. It was actually more than Roy Hibbert. Okay, he rebounded, he out-rebounded our entire starting lineup except for Randall, okay, in only 21 minutes of play. He got four assists, which wasn't bad. He had a steal. Very good, if you watch the game, very good man-to-man defense against Dragic, who's smaller and arguably should be
craftier.
Quicker. Yeah, and definitely craftier. And had some decent stops on Wade too, that, you know, I didn't see any gifts of, but he played really well against Wade on a couple of times when he got switched off with Clarkson. And despite that, Lou Williams plays 26 minutes to shoot 3 for 11 from the field. Like, how does that move the needle for us? You know, Lou Williams is shooting 31% from the field overall this season. And it seems like D'Angelo's on such a short leash, but the same mistakes that, you know, other guys are making the same mistakes that he's getting criticized for, and they're still playing. So, like, what kind of message are you trying to send?
And even more so, how futile it is to put Lou Will in and not let D'Angelo play, and the lead stretches for Miami, you know? So, like, what is the point? And, you know, Lou Will's getting annoying to me. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, he's annoying me too.
In a different context, I'd love Lou Will, because if in a winning context where the team actually matters, I'd be like, oh yeah, keep doing that annoying thing where you try and hunt for fouls.
Yeah.
But in this context, it makes absolutely no sense. It's just annoying. It's killing the flow of the offense, and it's just pretty much him doing his thing devoid of any other, you know, cohesion with the rest of the group, essentially.
Right.
Just him hunting for fouls. But anyways, yeah, I thought D'Angelo played well in the small amount of time that he was in there. You know, he had that one sequence where he hit that no-look whip pass to, I think it was Clarkson, and then Clarkson hit it to Randall, and then Randall hit it to Hibbert. You know, every time D'Angelo passes, it seems like the ball finds energy, and the other, you know, it just opens it up for so many people. And then he also had that really nice fast break bounce pass to Clarkson on the break. So there were a few times where we saw some glimpses of the, you know, our triumvirate, essentially Clarkson, Russell, and Randall running the floor.
Right.
And when they're doing that together and Russell's the one manning the show, it always usually turns out really well.
Oh my God, it does.
Essentially,
very
you want
exciting
it to, be.
To watch.
Exactly. So, so why he didn't play more in a game, in a meaningless game like this, I don't know. But again, this is why this loss made no sense. And to just go back to your point about Porzingis, let's talk about someone who makes more sense in a comparison. Let's talk about Emmanuel Mudiay, who we talked about you know, before. You know, I just saw new quotes from Mike Malone because I think Emmanuel Mudiay hit a game winner against somebody
in his last game, essentially.
Yeah, so Mike Malone was pretty much saying why he keeps Mudiay out there, and he pretty much said you can't replicate those situations in practice. So I put the ball in his hands and allow him to make those mistakes because that's the fastest way he's going to learn. And so far, we've had a mixed bag, but hey, you know he had that game winner. So clearly he's learning from some – at least learning to have some confidence. So why we can't have that same mentality and why we have to have this old-school Byron Scott coach talking about how – the merits of sitting a guy down and making him focus on the bench and learning. I actually understand part of that, but the fact that your own coach doesn't tell you what you're doing wrong or how to fix things and just makes you visualize on your own while you're sitting down is detrimental to his development and absolutely terrible and poisonous and toxic, essentially. So that's essentially what this entire game was: toxic, poisonous, detrimental. So with that said, why don't we move on to at least a better looking game, the Orlando game. What did you think of the Orlando game?
The Orlando game, I mean, I think we both are going to say pretty much the same things. We looked a lot better. Like I said, we shot 49% from the field. If it wasn't for getting completely annihilated on the offensive glass, we would have easily won this game. We held Orlando to 40% shooting. They shot a good percentage from three, but like 40%, that's our best defensive effort by far of the year. 23 offensive rebounds we allowed, and we only collected seven. And again, going into this game, Orlando had allowed the most offensive rebounds in the entire NBA.
Right.
And we only collected seven, and they got 23 on us. So like at some level, you're like, if this what really was like maybe Byron changing something up strategy wise defensively, and we're just seeing delayed effects. So like maybe he did. I mean, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he switched something up and that's why our defense was so good. But because our defense got so much more aggressive on the perimeter, we were giving up more offensive rebounds because the guys weren't finishing the plays. And I get that it doesn't always all everything come together at once. So we just got the defense down. Maybe we'll get the rebounding later. That's all fine. I guess the thing that I liked the most was 25 assists as a team. We had like multiple guys with 4 and 5 assists, 49%, like I said, from the field.
Right.
And I guess getting to D'Angelo, really, I guess we want to focus on that fourth quarter. D'Angelo had a couple nice plays at the end. Randall had a nice play to tie the game. It was all around really good until Byron's horrible last second shot play. There's 25 seconds on the shot clock, 24 seconds left in the game. Sorry, 24 seconds left in the game. I can't speak. 25 seconds. Okay, so are we going to cut around this? Okay, so there's...
No, we're not.
No!
24 seconds.
All right.
25 seconds left in the game. 25
seconds left in the game. There's 24 seconds left on the shot clock. Literally, if you hold it until the end and shoot, as long as you miss not an air ball like dumbass Lou Williams, the game's over. Okay, and you go into overtime, and that's fine. That's what you want. This is the genius play that Byron drew up. Okay, so
he's like, I'm gonna put the ball in D'Angelo's hands, like Mike Malone does.
He has D'Angelo hold the ball for about 15 seconds, and just stand there. And Lou Williams, without a screen or anything, just runs straight towards D'Angelo to catch the ball. The ball then goes to Lou Williams. I guess, like, that's supposed to be the twist. It's actually going to be Lou Williams, although there's still, like, 9 seconds left. So, like, I wonder what's going to – you know, they can't react that fast. So he gives it to Lou Williams, who at this point was shooting 2 for 7 in the game and is, like we've mentioned multiple times – on the season, just shooting horrendous 31%, okay? Gives the ball to Lou Williams. Lou Williams does some bullshit dancing around and tries to draw a foul and horribly right. not only misses the shot, but misses the shot so bad because it was a horrible isolation play that it's an air ball. It doesn't touch the shot clock. Orlando has like a full 1+ seconds to get a shot off, and obviously the rest is history. So, like you
said, but I want to say D'Angelo learned a very important lesson here. He learned how to hold the ball in crunch time situation.
That's exactly
for 15 right. seconds, and I think he gained some confidence there. Sorry, what were you gonna say?
No, you're exactly right. Next time he's in this situation, he'll know how to hold the ball really well.
Hold it really tight.
He won't
wait for Kobe to come off the screen,
and he'll wait for Kobe so he could force a pass to Kobe. So. Yeah, dude, it's we pretty much summarized it. D'Angelo looked better. And this is the type of game, again, where you're going to see glimpses. Like, you were just talking about Moody, and I was looking at his stats. So several games ago, he had a game where he played 30 plus minutes. He had 5 assists and like four or five turnovers. And he shot 6 for 19 from the field. 2 games later, he plays like a similar amount of time. 11 assists and 1 turnover. That's amazing, right. You know? So it's like, these guys are rookies. They're going to go back and forth. They're going to be up and down. Unless you're Karl Anthony Towns or Jahlil Okafor, you're not going to be, like, ready to go right now. And
those guys get confidence off rebounds and putbacks, so it's a different kind of game.
It's completely different for a big man, you know? So, especially a big man who has skills already coming into the NBA.
Yep.
So, It's just always been like this for guards. D'Angelo is currently shooting 39% or just about actually 40% from the field. I'm pretty sure in our preseason prediction in our predictions, we said D'Angelo is probably going to shoot about 40% from the field because he's a really good shooter. And for whatever reason, unless your name is Steph Curry, like most of these guys who are one and done, Steph Curry was like multiple year college player, but when you're usually these one and done guys who come in at 19, even Kevin Durant shot like 40% from the field, Westbrook 39%, like Harden 39%. They just all it's that part of your game is hard to adapt. Like, when are you going to get your shots off? How are you going to shoot over bigger and, you know, stronger defenders? Like, where are you going to get to your spots on the floor? This is all stuff that you learn by playing. So, like, you're going to have to accept the random games that D'Angelo goes 3 for 13 for the ones that he drops like 25 points and everybody's like, oh my God, this is why we drafted him number 2, you know? But when you're not playing him, he's not going to have those opportunities. So I guess bring it full circle. Like you said, this a tale of two losses. The Miami one is what you don't want to see. If we lost every game, like we lost this Orlando game,
I'd be happy.
Exactly. Me too. Where it came down to, like, you know, both teams played hard, it came down.
But if it ends the same way with the same terrible possession, I might kill myself.
That's true.
I just want to point that out.
So it's like, you know, but it comes down to, like, it's a close game. And the reason we lost is because we just didn't have the guys who knew how to execute down the stretch. I will totally accept that because they're gaining that experience, learning how to do it. So when their time comes, they'll be ready. What I don't, you know, the last thing I said, wanted to say is the super negative thing I take from this game was, again, Lou Williams. Yes, he did not replace D'Angelo, but he closed the game for Jordan Clarkson, who's like also a second year player, arguably our best player, definitely our most efficient player. And okay, yeah, he shot 2 for 7 in this game. Lou Williams shot 2 for 8. Big deal. Okay. Clarkson had 5 assists. He was probing. You know, even when he misses, it's like he's missing on good shots, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just a miss, but it's like he's going to be efficient because he takes high quality shots. So you don't want that guy to be in the game. You know, it's just so ridiculous to me that the way that Byron always, like, he feels like he needs to have Lou Williams out there. I wish somebody, I mean, I'm sure there's stats on this somewhere, but I wish I had stats about what percentage Lou Williams is shooting in fourth quarters of games. Because right. Byron is leaving him out there as if this is doing something positive for us. And I swear to God, every shot he takes results in a miss.
You're right. And, you know, I feel like Byron pretty much rotates young guys who are going to be in his doghouse, essentially. So now it's Jordan Clarkson, right? It's just, like, ridiculous. It's like, when are we going to get into this guy's head that these guys need to play together? I know people are going to say that, like, stop overreacting. It's only, like, the eighth game or whatever. But, dude, this season is going nowhere fast. Why not start this early so that by the time we're in the second half of the season, these guys actually look actually good because they've been through this already. There's no point now because we know it's clearly a lost season. There's no point to make this a slow burn, like we said, for the, you know, Masters of None. We don't want this to be Masters of None. Right. We want it to be like the league, man. We want it to be exciting and fun and at least watchable.
Yeah.
I don't know how I tied that in, but that was pretty good.
That's amazing.
So yeah, you know, let's now go into, I guess, you know, to recap the end of the game. You know, obviously Lule took the terrible shot, and then son of a Vucevic, you know, hit that fadeaway jump shot. And after he hit that, I was like, you know, we deserve to lose that game after that possession. And I wasn't mad at all. I was just like,
yeah, they earned it.
Whoop. Exactly. So let's go into more detail, I guess, about I guess before we dissect D'Angelo a little more again, let's talk about Larry Nance, the god. The Greek
Larry
god.
Nance,
oh,
the
my
god.
Wow, 13 points. You know, he only had 3 rebounds, but you could tell his activity was everywhere. 6 for 6, 1 for 1, hitting jump shots, hitting threes. What's really sad is, like, you know, we called him, like, a poor man's Aaron Gordon, but he might just be Aaron Gordon at this point because Orlando's dealing with their own Byron Scott situation with Scott Skiles playing Aaron Gordon, like, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, Magic fans must be as frustrated as we are to see their young stud, like, you know, on the bench, essentially, for Evan Fournier, 6 for 16, Evan Fournier playing. But anyways, yeah, back to Larry Nance. He pretty much showed us why we called him the poor man's Aaron Gordon, because he showed us that he can do everything. And he's doing this as a rookie. I didn't expect him to kind of show this soon. What did you see out of Larry Nance in this game?
Pretty much everything you said. This guy plays so smart. He always is in the right position. He is really good at knowing when he should shoot. When he is ready to take his shot, he takes it with confidence, which is what you should do. He's like, I'm wide open. That somebody just passed it to me. I'm going to, as the ball's coming to me, I'm going to think about how I'm going to shoot. And then when I catch it, I'm just going to do that. You know, he's not, like, hesitating, and I get that, that's maybe a confidence thing because he tends to hit his jumpers, but you still have to go out there and execute it, you know? And he's just, like, even the type of guy to where if he has an off-shooting game, you can just count on him to not shoot and focus on other things.
Yep.
And we haven't even seen, because he's so smart, he's so concerned about everything else right now that we haven't even seen the Larry Nance that's, like, gonna be a defensive force, I think, one day. Like, Stu has hinted that this guy might be a guy that in the future you can point to him and be like, I need you to go shut so and so down, and he can and he can do it because he has that kind of potential. His hands are really good. I mean, I can't tell you how many times he's gotten, like, near steals. You know, it seems like he's always just slightly off, or, like,
yeah,
crazy highlight blocks that came after fouls, so, like, he didn't get the block credit. But he, oh my god, it's so fun to watch him play. Obviously he's not going to shoot 6 for 6 every game, but he has shown some range, activity on rebounds. I didn't expect him to put up these types of numbers, only because, not necessarily just because he's a first year, but mostly because I didn't expect him to play. I knew we had Randall. I knew we had Brandon Bass, who we brought in as a veteran backup power forward, and I just wasn't expecting Nance to get any runtime. And given how well he's playing now, isn't it just, like, a complete travesty that Byron Scott played Ryan Kelly for so much and, like, those?
Yeah,
those
five, man.
It's like, you talk about, like,
night and day.
What's the guy showing you in practice? Was Larry Nance just completely, like, keeled over, vomiting and dying or something in practice? Like, completely, like, not doing anything? Because how could it have been so obvious to everybody in the world when Larry Nance goes out there that he's, like, head and shoulders above Ryan Kelly at this stage? And yet still Byron was like, well, Ryan Kelly's got, like, 2 years of experience under his belt. So, you know, he's a veteran and he's more poised right now. Yeah, Larry Nance, amazing. Sadly, it took him this long to get some run time, and I hope to see some lineups where he plays next to Randall, although I don't know if that's going to happen because Byron
is not creative, and Byron is Byron.
Yeah.
Exactly. I saw some Lance lineups.
Lance Nance.
Lance Nance. We're going to be calling him Lance and Nance lots of times. Nancy Drew. But in Summer League, he played some center minutes, you know, and hopefully once we get Luke Walton, we can have an actual crazy lineup where it's like Larry Nance at the center spot, Randall at the four, or you can make them interchangeable, and then Clarkson, D'Angelo, and then whoever we get as our wing. You can put Anthony Brown for now. But, exactly. I mean, that's what the Warriors are doing. They're playing Harrison Barnes at center at times. You know, why not?
I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they play Draymond at center already, right. You know, but they've started playing Harrison Barnes at center too to make it quicker. But anyways, Larry Nance is such a versatile player, and this is like his third or fourth string of pretty decent games now. This is kind of his, you know, breakout game, but he's been doing pretty well in limited minutes already. Yeah, yeah. So
even when he's not putting up crazy scoring numbers, he just looks so good out there. You know, the way he plays, he's always in the right position. He plays such very solid defense. I mean, there were some plays where just to go back to like the Knicks game where he got switched on to Jerian Grant and he was like containing that fool on the perimeter. This guy was like trying to shake and bake and like, you know, put a move on him because he's like, oh, I got a big on me. I'm going to go around him. And Larry Nance stood his ground and played outstanding man-to-man defense. And that's the thing, like you mentioned Draymond, who I think we threw out as like, and maybe our first episode for people who didn't know Nance, that was like a potential projection of what we wanted this guy to be. Not as strong, but like athletic, you know, undersized, but he rebounds, he plays defense, he can shoot a little bit. That's what we were hoping for Nance. Okay, if the Warriors are going to go out there and play Draymond some minutes at center and they can at least get away with it, we should seriously think about this, because I think we saw on several possessions in the Orlando game, and if this should be really obvious to everybody, Julius Randle operates much, much, much better when he has space.
Oh, for sure.
And because
he's not a post-up guy.
He's not a post-up guy yet. And because the spacing in our offense is so bad, every time he drives into the paint, it results in some horrible, horrible shot, because he's not an elevator, you know what I mean? So he gets in there and he tries to muscle it through like three defenders, and it's not gonna work. But when he has his man one-on-one, oh my god, and he just can blow by that guy and there's no help. Let me tell you, when there's not gonna be any help, when you have your center Larry Nance standing in the you know, weak side corner ready to catch and shoot a three, and he's shown that he has that short corner range, you know, if you have your center standing out there, that's going to open up the floor so much for Randall. Instead, we have like Roy Hibbert, who, look, I like Roy. We need him in there for defense. Byron's not excessively playing him, I guess. And that's all fine. But why not try that, you know? Try it. Right. Just try it once and see if it works.
Maybe just once, you know?
Just once. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then you can go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, that didn't work. But, you know, you got to try it, for God's sake.
You know, the way that he tries Roy Hibbert post-ups at least five times a game. Why don't we try that, you know?
right.
Which should really be the end of that. And you didn't even mention, you know, outside of Larry Nance maybe spotting up. I mean, think about the possibilities of a Larry Nance cutting and Julius Randle using his amazing passing ability to find that cutter instead of it being Roy Hibbert on that end. It's Larry Nance catching it and jamming it on people.
Definitely.
I mean, these guys could do pick and rolls with each other, and it could be some sort of weird, like, Pau, Gasol, Lamar Odom kind of deal, except more athletic, you know? So, I mean, the things look bright, and if you just extrapolate these guys in a vacuum and just look at them individually and maybe think of them in a different system, like, the future's bright. It's just we're stuck in this middle way right now, rock in a hard place, essentially, with Byron Scott, that we kind of have to think of these guys not in this context right now, because this isn't how it's going to be forever, I think. Or I hope not.
I hope.
But so yeah, Larry Nance looks really good. And this is coming from a guy who, when we were at your house watching the draft, you said, you know, ESPN made him look like Luke Walton. And we just had our hands to our heads going, what? It was just hilarious. But, you know, it's quickly become very apparent why we drafted this guy. One, he's outside of, you know, the Twitter Kobe rape comments. Outside of that, he's a very smart guy, and I guess outside of his fashion decisions and wearing a freaking polo to his press conference, outside of those, he's a very well-spoken, very smart guy with a really really cute girlfriend, but that's beside the fact.
Oh my god, so attractive.
And he's just, you can tell that he just has all these intangibles, and we haven't even seen yet his playmaking ability, which it's in there. It's not, you know, it's not crazy playmaking, but he can definitely playmake, which he did in college. So I'd almost describe his game as a Draymond Green / Josh McRoberts type fusion. If you watch Josh McRoberts in his prime with Charlotte or Miami, he was essentially a point forward, kind of like Lamar Odom. And I think Larry Nance is just as athletic as McRoberts. So the future's looking up for Nance, and I originally didn't even see him as anything more than a bench player, but if they kind of mess around with the lineups, I could see him as a starter almost. I mean, maybe I think if he'll fit best on the bench, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he ended up becoming a starter with Randall in the future. I don't know how they'd shuffle that or work with the positions, but he's kind of undeniable in terms of the impact he has.
Well, it's like, look, how can they possibly shuffle it? Well, I wish Byron experimented. It gets back to the experimentation comment. Remember, I think we even talked about, we're not head coaches in the NBA, but we talked about, like, Larry Nance is supremely quick. We know he's he has very good defensive potential. He's not super heavy, so can he keep up with small forwards? Maybe. Then you can have this crazy lineup where you're playing this crazy switching lineup at four positions. You basically have two combo guards in Clarkson and Russell. You have two forwards who can play either forward position if Randall develops a jumper. You know, Randall and Nance both run. And then, you know, you get a center to round it all out. So I'm not
right.
I think that there's so much potential for Nance. Like, sort of the way, I mean, we keep coming back to Draymond, but like the way they use him, sometimes he plays three, although that's more rare now, but when he first started, he played a lot of three. He plays right. mostly four, and he plays some center.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, a creative way to get Nance some minutes.
For sure.
But, you know, the key word there was creative, so I wouldn't hold your breath.
I mean, it just shows, like, the disconnect right now between the front office and, well, the disconnect between the front office, because they make these moves where it seems like we're going the right direction in terms
exactly.
of showing some progress, in terms of you draft a guy like Nance, you're getting Anthony Brown, getting a guy like D'Angelo Russell, and it looks like we're trying to form a Golden State Warriors type of system and offensive group.
Exactly.
And yet you still have this guy, Byron Scott, coaching this team and teaching them about the Princeton. You know, it just doesn't make any sense, doesn't go together. I think things are going to come to a head at the latest this summer. You know, it has to. So right now we just kind of have to wait it out, kind of like I have to wait out my hemorrhoids. So
oh God.
Yeah, go ahead.
They're still there. I'm still talking about that. All right. So, okay, look, I'm going to play, because we just trash on Byron so hard, and like, yeah, he deserves it, but I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I, you know, everyone knows out there my feelings on Byron, but look, I refuse to believe that there's this much of a disconnect between the front office and the coach, because we hired a company man to be our coach.
Yeah.
Like you said, I'm not going to blame the front office for anything that's going on right now, because the front office has drafted a really nice team over the course of just a couple years. We haven't even seen Anthony Brown unleashed yet, who could be like a very solid role player for us.
Yeah.
And we have some guys in the D League, to be honest, who we saw in preseason who aren't bad either. So, look, the front office has put together a nice team that can grow together. To just play devil's advocate for a few minutes here, maybe this is all part of some, like, grand plan. Maybe they know that this is, like, ultimately stupid, what they're trying to run right now. But they're trying to, like, teach these guys, you're not going to get by in a 13, 15, 16 year NBA career by being a street ball player. You have to learn how to play in some type of structured offense. Maybe we're not going to play the Princeton forever, but whatever we decide to play, you have to be ready to adapt to that. And you have to, you know, this is an offense that is supremely structured. Like, D'Angelo is basically not allowed to do anything. You know, he has to stay within the confines, and maybe from that he'll grow. I mean, we sort of saw, like, the first couple of games last year, we saw a few random Jordan Clarkson appearances, and we saw him a lot in the preseason, and he just looked like a chicken with his head cut off out there. Like, he was throwing up all kinds of wild shots. Like, he definitely was not bashful, and he did not look very good at all. And I was just remember thinking, like, oh God, this guy is like years away from even being like a decent contributor if he can be like a decent, even like a decent bench player. And then fast forward like 2 months, he doesn't play. He's working really hard in practice. I think he got some D-League experience, and Kobe decides to sit out the season. Boom. Next day, Jordan Clarkson's the starter. You know what I mean? And he just got sort of thrown out there. And because he had all that time to like go to the D-League and like practice Byron's system and practice every day for 2 months in that system and like really learn what Byron wanted from him and really learn how to be like a real NBA vet, like pro, he came in and he like almost immediately looked like a legit NBA player. He had some ups and downs a little bit, but by the end of the season, we were watching him drop 30 points on Russell Westbrook, you know? Right. So maybe there is a method to this madness for Byron. I mean, maybe I mean, at this point, all I can hope for, I don't think what I'm even saying is true, just to be fully clear, but like
I'm right now I'm like, am I talking to Eric Pincus?
I know. I just want to like, yeah, really clarify that I don't even really think that like what I'm saying is definitely true. I just at this hope. Point that's all I can hope for is that there's right. some sort of master plan here. This is why, like, presumably the front office, they have eyes. This is the same front office that drafted Randall, drafted Clarkson, drafted D'Angelo, drafted Larry Nance, who is on nobody's radar. And yeah. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that they have eyes and they can see what's going on.
Right.
And if they're not telling Byron anything and they're happy with the way he's doing things, and if Kobe's happy with the way things are going, then I'm just going to sit back and be like, maybe they all know what they're doing. And maybe this is all part of some grand plan that like, look, we might win 15 games this year, but we're going to make D'Angelo Russell a veteran. You know, we might be like bottom of the NBA and offensive fast break points, but we're going to make Jordan Clarkson a pro. You know what I mean? Like, so maybe that's the point. And I'll give them the benefit of the doubt that it is. I don't think that's the point. I don't think that they're like, I don't know if that's what it is. I don't really think, but I'm hoping.
Right. Well, you did your best, man. You did your best. I give you props. I pat you on the back for that right. one. But yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. All I can say is yeah. I think for me, I can separate and make mutually exclusive the job that Mitch has done in terms of drafting and personnel choices, because clearly we're at top of the game still in that, and that hasn't changed. The disconnect I see maybe, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I could see a disconnect maybe happening with Mitch and Jim and the Buss family and what's going on. And one, obviously, clearly a disconnect between what Jeannie wants and what her dad wants. I mean, we've seen this disconnect before, right? With Jim Buss or Jerry Buss wanting Mike D'Antoni, and then, you know, Jeannie wanting somebody else, all this stuff. And I feel like that could be the reason why we're still in this place where Jeannie might be pushing Byron Scott, Jim might like Byron Scott too. We're still unsure of where we really want to be, where, who knows, Mitch may really know what he wants to do and have the master plan in hand. It's just he works for people that kind of are all over the place, and maybe it's his job right now to try and, like, you know, pick up all the pieces essentially, and hopefully he's getting on the right track in terms of it'll all be turned around pretty soon once we get past this Byron Scott Kobe phase. So that's what I'm hoping. With that said, I want to quickly, after all that Larry Nance talk, which is great, I want to quickly go more into detail about D'Angelo's game. So like I told you, like I talked about earlier, it seems like every critique that gets thrown this kid's way, he makes a definitive effort to address that. That's what he did in Miami. He only got 20 minutes, though. And that's what he clearly did this game. Couldn't you tell everybody was bashing him for not being aggressive and not driving into the lane? I was listening to like the radio post-game for the Miami game, and people were just bashing him for not crossing the free throw line and not, you know, pretty much not going into the paint. And what does he do? Like the first like four possessions of this game, he's like driving it into the paint on Alfred Payton, who's a pretty tall and long guard. And he takes it to him, like, and shows us some quickness, shows us his ability to finish. It was just really impressive to see D'Angelo come out with, I guess, what Eric Pincus calls that fire, quote unquote, that fire that he lacks, you know, which is such an arbitrary phrase that I hate when he brings that up, essentially. Right. But I guess D'Angelo showed that fire. But it was really nice to see him attack and show that he can do that, and that he's not just Kendall Marshall, which is another comp that I hate people throwing out. He's clearly not Kendall Marshall, guys. But yeah, so I liked how aggressive he looked, and I liked how he took it to the basket. But more so than that, I liked how he looked man-on-man defense-wise, because he was cutting Payton off every single time Payton was trying to drive. And I thought that was really impressive. I don't know if you saw that clip, too, where he had to switch on Randall's man, which was, I think, Tobias Harris. And then Randall switched back to Tobias Harris, and then Russell contested like another whoever was guarding. He was guarding originally, and he just showed like such great defensive awareness there. So I was really impressed by his defense, and it's clear that he made a definitive effort to address that fact, as well as the the driving fact as well. What was I gonna say? So yeah, you know, D'Angelo showed a lot of progress in this game in terms of really addressing some points that people wanted him to work on. What did you think about his defense?
His defense, I thought, was fine. I mean, I touched on it earlier. I like the way he's playing defense. Look, he's a rookie, and every rookie is going to get burned back door sometimes.
I think that's his main problem.
That's his main problem right now. Every rookie is going to fall asleep sometimes. Every rookie is going to bite for some, you know, head fakes, trying to get a shot block or something and find himself out of position. That's going to happen, you know. His man-to-man defense is really not bad.
It's solid.
We did our Ed Isaacson talk. He was trashing D'Angelo's defense. He was like, who's he going to guard? When we were watching that Miami game, I was like, well, he guards Dragic, he guards Wade. Who can he guard on the perimeter, you know? So maybe he'll never be the guy who can guard. I mean, nobody can guard Steph Curry, but maybe he can't guard like your lightning quick point guard. But I don't even think nobody can guard those guys, you know? Yeah. So it's going to be a team effort always for those guys. And I think minus those guys, he's very respectable.
Right. Yeah, he's going to get beat back door. And he lost a lot of guys. He lost Shabazz Napier a lot on the 3-point line.
Yeah.
But you know, that comes in time. He's going to, once we actually have an actual defensive system, which clearly we don't, you know, I'm sure that'll help. Because clearly there's no defensive system here when Luau Deng can waltz 90 feet and for an uncontested layup, which is the exact same play that Gary Harris did for an uncontested dunk. So, I mean, what's Byron teaching these guys, clearly? Anyways.
I just wanted to add one thing about you mentioned the driving. That's another thing that, like, again, people out there shouldn't freak out too much. Once this guy starts to physically develop and learn where he can get, like how to get to his spots on the floor, he's 6'5 with about like a 6'11 wingspan or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not an above the rim player, and he doesn't have to be when he's being guarded by point guards. He's going to get his shots up in the paint over anybody, dude. That's going to be like a huge matchup nightmare. Like imagine James Harden or Dwayne Wade being guarded by like 6'1 guys. So that's going to be a really nice thing that, you know, props to Mitchell in the front office for having the courage to go out with this like two combo guard lineup. And both of these guys eventually are going to be drivers, shooters, assist guys. It's going to be fun to watch in a few years, I think.
Right. And to that point, I think another thing to point out is that I feel like D'Angelo is almost psyching himself out also because of the Byron Scott thing, who's not giving him any confidence whatsoever. But if you watch clips of D'Angelo in high school, when he was at the peak of his confidence, essentially, he was driving a lot. He was dunking on people, essentially, too. I feel like in the NBA, he's psyching himself out too much to the point where he's not sure whether he can even drive on anybody. But slowly, as he actually tries to do it, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm 6'5". This guy's shorter and I'm longer. I can actually do this. And you saw it in this game against Alfred Payton. And then on that screen where he took it right at Vucevic, he showed some actual quickness. And then he finished with the right hand, which I thought was really impressive. You know, so even in this small early stage, he's already showing signs of kind of testing out the waters and gaining some confidence in that ability. But essentially, what I eventually – I don't know if he'll ever be as good as he looked in high school in terms of driving, but that all comes with confidence, and that all comes with, you know, shaping his body the right way and learning more about what he can or can't do and what he can or can't get away with, you know. But if you saw that Vucevic drive, he actually did the James Harden head fake, you know, tilt his head back while he's hitting it, trying to get the foul. He didn't get the foul, but hopefully one day he will. So,
it's just,
you know,
about learning, you know.
Totally. And it's all about confidence too. I mean – imagine like all the damage, psychological damage Byron has already done to this kid, and he still comes out in this game, gets 14.6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. I mean, he even had a quote at the end of the game where he was like, I was built for this. You know, they're talking about whether he can play in the clutch, and he goes, I was built for this. So I don't know what all this talk is about of him lacking fire and all this stuff. Maybe he needs to work harder. I don't know. But I honestly wouldn't trust Byron Scott's judgment, even in practice, even if we can't see what's going on, based on the fact that he was playing Ryan Kelly over Larry Nance. So what can you really, you know, say about that? With that said, it was very encouraging to see D'Angelo Russell have this type of game. If anybody who's freaking out about this kid in terms of, you know, it's just funny to me, the mass hysteria on this guy and the overreaction, because what is he averaging right now? He's averaging, in 25 minutes, he's averaging 9.3 points, 3.6 rebounds, 2.6 assists. He's not even getting the chance to do anything, so he's only averaging, what, 1.8 turnovers? He has 1.1 steals, shooting 1.1 threes, you know? I mean, per 36, he's 13 points, 5 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.6 steals. I mean, imagine if he actually got 30, 35 minutes and actually had the confidence to do what he wants to do. He's a killer in the mid-range. He can hit that jump shot whenever he wants. Even when he misses, I think it's a good shot,
yeah,
because he can hit that shot, you know?
And in a couple of years, that shot is going to be, like, guaranteed, like, free money. It's going to be like Chris Paul getting into the mid-range. And
that's...
like, yeah, when Chris Paul has a wide-open 16-foot jump shot, that thing, you might as well just start walking back to the other side. It's going in. And D'Angelo,
that's exactly what I was
going to say. Yeah, D'Angelo looks like he's gonna be there for sure. And maybe even like later this year, who knows?
And we've talked about this before. I know there's a lot of disdain for like mid-range jump shots, but when you're a point guard and you have that mid-range jump shot, it's very important to have. That's what separates like the great point guards from the good point guards. Those guys who can probe and get the, you know, on pick and rolls, like put the defense on their heels by being able to hit that mid-range jump shot. And that's how Chris Paul has made a living. You know, Chris Paul's not a dead-eye three-point shooter, but he's killer in the mid-range, and he gets people on their heels because he can either pass or shoot. So I definitely agree with you on that comparison. If there's one thing that I kind of was annoyed about with D'Angelo was I kind of hate his one-handed whip passes across the court.
He has to stop that.
Lou Will, he has to stop that. It's like not effective, and especially because it's going to Lou Will, and most of his passes were like overshot to the point where Lou Will would catch them like 10 feet out from the three-point line, and Lou Will decided to take it anyways, so it's just, I hope he stops that pass, you know?
Yeah.
With that said, yeah, so I think that'll do it for our wrap-up of the Florida two-step for the Lakers. Like we said again, to reiterate, you know, tale of two losses. The Miami game is what we saw essentially for the majority of the season in terms of we're losing, it's futile, and the young guys aren't learning and they're not growing, and in fact, they're getting benched in the fourth quarter. The Orlando game is more of what we like to see, where you see some cohesion between our young guys, Randall, Clarkson, and Russell, except, you know, obviously Clarkson was in the doghouse today, but hopefully we'll get all three on board, and this is just a glimpse of what you'll see with Kobe out of the lineup. We'll have to see once he comes back whether things will change again. I don't know if you knew this, but in the Miami game, the line actually changed in Vegas once they found out that Kobe was out. So originally it was Lakers plus 12, and then Kobe sat out, and it was Lakers plus 11. So Kobe sitting out actually affected it by a point, which tells you everything. We saw a lot of improvement in the Orlando game. Hopefully we can continue to see that type of progress moving forward. Yeah, there was one other point that I wanted to bring up about D'Angelo that I can't really get to right now, but that's okay. So yeah, that does it for our recap, and we will close it out right after this.
You have a reason why?
I don't. I wish I did. If I did, I would solve it.
All right, we are back for the close of the show. I remembered my thought on D'Angelo. For anybody that's freaking out about D'Angelo once again and the mass hysteria, please just think about the fact that D'Angelo, again, hasn't played outside of these last two games, hasn't played without Kobe. And if you want to reassure yourself about what this guy can do, take what he did in the Orlando game in terms of offensively, and then put that together with what you saw in preseason when he had that 11 assist game and he was playing with like the bench unit and he was allowed to run the show. I think that's the type of D'Angelo you should be thinking about when you're freaking out over this guy and you're not sure if he can do anything. He can do everything, guys. He can score here. And then you clearly saw that he can pass. It's just in these contexts with Kobe and then, you know, Lou Will, it's just not conducive for him to be able to do those things that we were able to see him do in the preseason, you know? And he actually had a couple of good games in preseason too, where he showed some offensive aggressiveness. So put everything into context is what I'm trying to say, essentially, when you say, oh, this guy's a bust. He can't do anything. We picked the wrong guy. Why can't he be like this? Like, it's all about context this season. It has to be viewed that way because we're not in a good situation with Byron in control of this ship, essentially. Any thoughts on my comment there?
I pretty much agree with everything you said. People shouldn't freak out, and you'll get there.
Right. All right, with that said, that's the end of our show. Please remember to follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and please continue to rate and review us and share us on iTunes, because that's what got us on the new and noteworthy page next to Bill Simmons. Yay! Maybe we'll have him on as a guest next show.
Oh, God.
Talking about his crappy Celtics. But yeah, so keep on doing that, and thanks for following us, and we'll be back next week. All right, later, guys. Tommy?
See ya.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
I'm not the struggling, the battle, pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would become a someone to deliver us.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you Geico has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while Geico could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, Geico has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than Geico. Geico, expect great savings and a whole lot more.